morning, Your Honors. Stan Hill on behalf of the appellant, Maurice Smith. I'd like to start by saying that a district court's finding of fact or review for clear error, reversal under this standard is appropriate only when the reviewing court is left with the definite and firm conviction that a mistake has been made, such as a situation in which a district court credited exceedingly improbable testimony. As Judge Wood recently stated in Kniff versus U.S., case decided in December of 2003, we defer to a district court's credibility determinations unless the district judge has chosen to credit exceedingly improbable testimony. Now, this is the situation that we've got. We've got two police officers who claim that my client was driving a vehicle with one license plate. My client, on the other hand, said that he had two, one on the front and one on the back. The officers inventoried the car, they took it to the pound, and a completely unbiased and impartial witness viewed the car, and although he had at the time that he testified no present recollection of the vehicle, he testified very credibly that his report was prepared contemporaneously with the observation and that his report was correct.
But Mr. Hill, here's my problem with your argument. Either we do give deference under the clear error standard to these decisions as to which witnesses to believe, here the officers versus the inventory man and the defendant, or we don't. I think the quotation you read from Caniff might be a bit out of context, but be that as it may, I can't figure out what rule of law says, well, this time we're going to go with the inventory officer rather than the officers, even though the district court didn't. And next time something else, that really means that there is no clear error review. It means it's all de novo, which would be, to put it mildly, a radical change in our jurisprudence.
Well, this circuit also stated in Bash, Your Honor, that reversal is appropriate if this court is left with a definite and firm conviction that a mistake was made.
So you're giving her... How do we know a mistake was made? The judge thought that, you know, maybe this fellow at the car pound made a mistake. You know, he's just checking things off and he checked the wrong thing, so wrong box, not paying attention. That's plausible, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So the judge had to decide between the police officers, the conflict. She had to resolve the conflict between these officers. And what can we say about that?
All that I can say, and you've got it, Judge, all that I can say is that on cross-examination of those officers, they were impeached. They called the car an Oldsmobile. The car was a Buick.
Now, they're always
that's so critical.
They're always making mistakes, right?
They didn't remember
anything. They made mistakes, so maybe this fellow who inventoried the car made a mistake.
Well, they couldn't even remember that the car was a beater, Judge. It had damage all over it. And they didn't even remember that. One officer claimed that it was for no front plate. The other officer just stated in his report generically, traffic violation. Judge, I'm not saying that you're supposed to second guess a district court judge, but you've given yourself leeway to do so.
When I read this material, I don't have any idea who is telling the truth. So what basis would I have for disagreeing with the district
court? All that I can say is that you look at the inventory report, it says two license plates.
Yes, I know, and then you learn, and then it may be a mistake. You admit it may be a mistake.
But may
you
I?
May have made a mistake.
May
the
I?
The arresting officers may have made a mistake.
May I just say one thing, though, Judge? If he has a habit of making a mistake, or if he made a mistake, the government has got to show that this guy is reckless or he's negligent, that he's got a history of making mistakes. This guy's been working there for years. The government has...
He's never made a mistake before.
No, what I'm saying is that if he had... The government's got some obligation to say that this guy is not credible. They showed absolutely nothing. I'm not saying that he's only human, as is the district court judge. But the inventory clerk...
We're immortals ourselves.
We all are, Judge. But we've got a business record that says that there were two plates.
Yeah,
the government didn't present.
Not infallible, right?
I'm saying that the point that I'm trying to make, Judge, is that if that's the case, The judge can't just make that assumption. The prosecution has got to present some evidence of that. I mean, we're talking about a guy who comes in. If he's incredible, you can't just assume that he makes mistakes. You've got to show that he's got a record of making mistakes.
This is not the kind of thing. You know, it's not like he's saying it's snowing in July, although possibly in Chicago, well, you never know. But what we look for are things that are just so patently off base that you just can't get them to work together. Whereas this, as Judge Posner is saying, could well be somebody who's in a hurry in the middle of the night or just not paying attention.
Or it could be two officers who are respectfully attempting to justify an arrest for which they otherwise had no probable cause.
It could be.
And we know from their reports that, as I indicated, that they got a lot of things wrong about that. They couldn't remember that it was a beater. They couldn't remember a lot of things. But all of a sudden, and that was brought out on cross-examination, as counsel for the defendant was required to do. Now, if the government's key opposition witnesses has got those kinds of problems, it would have been incumbent upon the government to show those fallacies rather than us to take judicial notice of the fact that people make mistakes.
Well, the government could have done no more about it than you can had the district court judge made the opposite credibility determination. The facts were on the table. She had a call to make. She made it.
I'm only suggesting that what they might have done was to at least gotten the person. I mean, they're the government. They gave us the records to begin with. We didn't have them. We got that inventory report from them. They could have also gotten this guy's personnel record and find out whether or not he's impeccable or whether or not he's got a history of being sloppy.
Did he testify?
Yes, he testified.
And did you? Were you Smith's lawyer in the district court?
Yes, I was.
So did you ask this fellow whether he makes mistakes a lot?
I asked him was his report accurate. I asked him was his report accurate and whether or not he had been doing this long enough to know how to do it. And essentially, he said yes, and the government didn't rebut it.
Well, did you ask him whether he'd ever made a mistake?
I did not ask him whether or not he had ever made a mistake, nor was there any evidence in the record that he had ever made a mistake.
He said no, he'd never made a mistake. He's infallible. It would have strengthened your case, right?
As well as the government's, I would think. I would submit respectfully, Your Honor.
So let me ask you this, Mr. Hill. Are there any, and recognizing this is a very fact-intensive judgment that we have to make here, do you have any cases that are close to our situation?
Yes.
That you think would be instructive? Because basically you are asking us to really reinterpret that evidence and set aside the district court's view.
This court in United States versus Bass on April 7th, 2003, did not reverse it, but stated that that was a legitimate basis upon which to appeal to this court. And in that case, although that court found that the officer, that the judgment of the district court was credible, what was left open was the right of this court to look at it and make its own determination. Now, but for that law, I wouldn't be able to be before you because we're to give due deference to it. But in Bass, this court said we can do that. And if we disagree, we can change that. And as respectfully Judge Wood wrote, I'm not saying, obviously, you've stated, the point is that it says, we defer to a district court's credibility determinations unless the district court has chosen to credit exceedingly. And in that particular case, you said that this is not a case in which the court credited wholly improbable testimony. I'm saying that, yes, the man is human. Yes, he could make mistakes. If that's the case, it's the government's burden, not the defendant's burden. It's their burden to show that to be the case. They gave us the records to make this argument with. They certainly could have obtained the records to support their position regarding whether or not the inventory clerk, who had nothing, just done his job, whether or not he was a sloppy guy or whether or not he was a precise guy. And I'm asking you, since you have that authority to do it, to send it back and say to the judge, well, you know, you got this one wrong. We're only human. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hill. Ms. Weiss?
May it please the court, Michelle Nasser Weiss on behalf of the United States. The district court did not clearly err in denying the defendant's motion to suppress. The testimony and evidence at the suppression hearing was sufficient for the district court to find that the police officers had probable cause to stop the defendant's vehicle for not having a front plate. Both officers testified that they observed the defendant's vehicle with no front plate, and the district court heard their testimony and observed their demeanor.
But what about all these things Mr. Hill raises, like the inventory report that was done immediately after the car was seized, showing that there were two plates, and the other inconsistencies that he referred to, not knowing the description of the car and these other things?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Hill raised all of these same credibility arguments to the district court, and in her ruling, Judge Bingey specifically stated that she found the police officer's testimony credible. She stated that she seriously considered the matter, she observed the demeanor, she found the police officer's testimony credible, and that she gave significantly less weight to the testimony of the inventory clerk for several reasons that she outlined in her ruling, specifically the circumstances surrounding his review of the vehicle, the fact that he had absolutely no independent or firsthand recollection of the vehicle, the time period that had passed since he had reviewed the vehicle, the number of cars he had checked since the defendant, the fact that he reviewed the defendant's car in 2.5 to 3 minutes at 3 o'clock in the morning after reviewing several cars, and the area that he worked in was poorly lit, and also the fact that the inventory clerk stated that he was mostly concerned about the damage to the vehicles because he worked for the city and was concerned about the city's liability, protecting the city from liability. Given the deference given to trial court's credibility findings, the district court's factual findings and credibility determinations do not constitute clear error. If there are no further questions,
thank you, Ms. White.
Government respectfully requests that this court affirm the district court's denial of the defendant's motion to suppress.
Thank you. So, Mr. Hill, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Okay. Is there anything further?
I'd like to just direct you to one or a few lines in my reply brief, and it's a citation there. And what we say, and I know about the rule against reading briefs, but first page, third paragraph, unlike the arresting police officers, Mr. Garcia had absolutely no vested interest, personal motivation, or any stake in justifying or supporting Smith's arrest. The district court failed to properly take into consideration the lack of personal motivation as an aid in determining credibility, citing to Scott versus United States, the United States Supreme Court. Personal motivation, personal stake. And I submit that that's what makes Garcia's testimony or tilts the scale in favor of the defendant on this one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. You were appointed, were you not?
Yes, I was.
So we thank you for your vigorous efforts on behalf of you.
You're welcome, Your Honor.